It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Welcome, everybody, to The Untold Story. I'm Martha McCallum. Thanks for joining us today. And it has been a week when we have been watching very closely what has been unfolding in Haiti. And it is disastrous in terms of what's happening to the people there. Gangs have taken over the police stations and municipal centers, and people are in very, very dire situations. And one of the stories that we watched this week was the effort by Corey Mills, the congressman from Florida, to go down there and rescue some people with an airlift operation. And among those that he rescued was the well-known author Mitch Albom, number one best-selling author of Tuesdays with Maury, and he was with his wife and others who work at the orphanage that he has there called Have Faith Haiti. And Mitch joins us. So tell us a little bit about what you're doing in Haiti, first of all, and then let's talk about the rescue.
Well, what I was doing in Haiti is I've been running an orphanage there since 2010 after the earthquake. And I've been there every month since January of 2010, so I'm no stranger to Haiti. We have 60 children currently in our orphanage and 40 staff members. And on this particular trip, we took 8 volunteers from America with varying talents, teachers and psychologists and artists. And that's not uncommon. We take people with us a lot. But in this particular trip, once we got there, the violence escalated rapidly and the prisons were broken into and a lot of dangerous people were let out. And very quickly, the airport was shut down by the gangs. The ports were shut down by the gangs. The roads were blocked. The borders were blocked. And suddenly there was no way to get out. Now, I've been in that situation before in Haiti. I was there when President Jovenel Moise was assassinated and they shut the country down then too. So we somewhat knew, you know, what to do, in that you have to hunker down, you have to try to get fuel and food and water as quickly as you can because you don't know how long you might be shut in place. But as the violence escalated and we heard the gunfire outside our gates, you know, getting louder and louder, I realized that we had to get at least those 8 volunteers home. They didn't sign up for that. Mm-hmm. And we tried to go through the State Department and the embassy, and they were of no use in terms of helping us. They were very polite on the phone, but they basically said, just stay put and we have nothing to tell you. And we have nothing at this time. And then suddenly after one of those conversations, we saw that they had all airlifted out in the middle of the night. So we realized we were kind of on our own when it came to getting out. And we tried several different attempts that failed with various different organizations that failed for different reasons. One morning we were left on the top of a hill where a helicopter was supposed to come in and pick us up, and it just never came. And we found out later that they were worried about it being shot down, so they didn't fly. And then, as you mentioned, Corey Mills and Lisa McClain, who are 2 congresspeople, but not acting as congresspeople, but as individual citizens, got in touch with us through a friend who we knew and said, we want to help get you out. And that began this this last attempt, which was successful.
Were you surprised, Mitch, by the reaction that you got from the embassy and the places that you would sort of imagine would be helpful in this situation?
Not really, Martha, because I've gone through that with them before. And, you know, after 14 years, you kind of know that the embassy is good for certain things. And they've been very helpful with us on many other things and helping, you know, get sick children out and things like that. So I'm not bad mouthing the embassy. But I know when it comes to, you know, helping you escape danger, there's not all that much that they can do. And, you know, they don't have an army down there. And if they send an army down there, it's usually to secure the embassy itself and then take care of the personnel. So, you know, a lot of people are trying to make a lot of out of this about how bad the State Department or the embassy is. I was more concerned with our children and our volunteers and how we could get out. And thank God, Corey Mills and Lisa McLean are the kind of people who took an interest in us. And so, ultimately, a private effort was what worked for us. And private efforts are probably going to be the only thing that are going to work for the many people who are still down there, who I'm advocating for, volunteers, other Americans, Canadians. There's a lot of really good people in Haiti who come down to volunteer out of their own good hearts. And they're stuck there right now, hoping to try to get out as we were able to.
The Untold Story continues right after this.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
You know, you talk about being on the top of this mountain area, waiting for a chopper to come. What can you tell us about the TikTok of how you actually did get out? And was it a frightening situation, I would imagine?
Well, it was, Martha, sort of one of those things like you kind of see in a movie, to be honest with you. They had tried to come in the night before and they were running late, and they were kind of insistent on coming in. And I said, please don't come because the sun will be up by the time you get here and you don't want to be flying where people can see you or can shoot at you or can film the helicopter and then make up rumors about it, which has happened before, saying, oh, that's the prime minister is trying to sneak into the country there. And next thing you know, you're drawing attention to your orphanage. So I beseeched them not to come, and they kind of stopped in midair and said, all right, we'll wait till the next day. And that day, I think, was early Tuesday morning. And in what now seems a little comical, wasn't then, they told us that they were going to come at 3 a.m., and we hadn't slept in several days, you know, all these near misses. And we were in the secure location where they were coming to get us, and nobody could stay up. So we said, all right, we'll set our alarm for 2 o'clock, and then we'll all get up and we'll be ready. And we had one bag apiece that they said we could take one little bag. And so we kind of fell asleep. And at 2:05, I heard some binging on my phone, and my wife, who was sleeping next to me, said, I think your phone's binging. And I looked over and the message said, are you getting these messages? And I quickly looked, and there had been 5 previous messages that I must have slept through. Those messages said, we're moving the timetable up 30 minutes out, 20 minutes out, 15 minutes out. And I looked at the clock and I had 6 minutes, and nobody was awake. So we had to wake everybody up and say, quick, 6 minutes. And then I got another bing and it said, no bags, passports only. Mm-hmm. And so we had to just, dig through our bags for our passports and leave everything and go running out. And, the reason they did that was because they had changed helicopters. And instead of bringing a helicopter that was built for 12 people, they bought one that had 4 seats. And,
wow.
So we basically, it landed, a guy popped out. I think it was Corey. It was so dark, and he popped out. He said, let's go. And everybody ran under the blades, jumped into this helicopter. There was no place to sit, so we just sort of crammed in and rolled on top of one another and made this big sort of human ball. And I believe Corey said it was 67 seconds from the time that the helicopter touched the ground to the time that it lifted back up again in the cloak of night. And we were up in the air. And then, you know, he told us to keep quiet and don't turn on phones or anything until we were out of Haitian airspace. And when that happened, I can tell you, Martha, I mean, he announced, okay, we're out of Haitian airspace, and everybody kind of clapped. But for my wife and me, I mean, it was kind of a gut punch because, you know, that meant that we were leaving our kids behind, something we didn't want to do. And so, and then we had all kinds of harried adventures trying to land, and the helicopter broke and hydraulic fluid leaked, and we ended up having to take vans for 4 hours to try to get to an airport. And, you know, but we were out, and, you know, so that just became sort of, you know, arduous journey, yeah. But it wasn't dangerous.
Absolutely.
But we were very fortunate, very blessed, and we're very grateful to have that those two individuals organize that trip, and for the pilots and the trip organizers.
Absolutely. It's incredible how, you know, brave and helpful some people are just to their core, and they fall in that category. Some news that has crossed in the past few minutes that I've been watching, coming from our State Department reporters: urgent, state has no plans to evacuate Americans from Haiti. Another headline that just came in: U.S. Marine anti-terrorism unit on the ground in Haiti, according to officials there. And I spent a little time looking at your website and the pictures of the children that you take care of, and it's an extraordinary story. And as you point out, there are many places that other Americans and other foreign nationals have built to take care of the beautiful children and people of Haiti. Do you have any communication with your children there? Tell me what's going on, as far as you know.
Well, we used the 8 or 9 days that we were kind of locked in there to spring into action, because, as I said, you know, we've done this before. So we gathered as much food as we could get in, all the water that we could bottle up, fuel that we had to buy at black market kind of prices, because, every time stuff like that happens, the gangs kind of limit the fuel that can get out, and people go crazy trying to get it because you don't have any electricity there most of the day. And so if you don't have a generator or fuel, you don't have any electrical power, which means you can't see, you can't keep your food in a refrigerator. And, you know, we feed 100 people a day. And so it's quite an operation. So we did all that. And now that we're out, I mean, I have daily communication constantly with, I mean, I'm on the phone all the time when I'm not talking to you, with our people on the ground in Haiti. And we've been doing this for a while. So, you know, we know what to do. We have our security force around us, protecting us from the violence out in the street. But, you know, nothing can protect the news from getting inside. And, you know, we worry about our kids, you know, being traumatized by all of this. I mean, Martha, it's hard to describe to anybody who hasn't been in Haiti, but it's just not a way to live under terror, where our kids have not left the orphanage in 3 years. They haven't set foot outside the gates in 3 years because it's too dangerous to be on the street. They get kidnapped or shot. They can't go, you know, for an ice cream. They can't go to a park. They can't go to the beach. We used to take them, you know, on bus rides to the beach and excursions. We just can't leave. Everything, the travel that we do back and forth, just when we come in, is in armored cars, bulletproof cars with bodyguards next to us. And we only go from the airport to the orphanage and the orphanage to the airport. And otherwise, nobody goes out. And I mean, just imagine living like that. You know, when our helicopter crossed out of Haiti airspace, you know, it occurred to me that if we had had a helicopter big enough to put 60 children in, they still wouldn't have been able to leave because no place would have them. The Dominican Republic would send them right back to Haiti. The other countries that don't let Haitians travel to them would send them back. And so the thing that we experience for 8 or 9 days, they experience every single day. They can't go anywhere, and they're trapped in this world of violence that is shut down any kind of normal human activity. And so everybody lives in fear. Everybody does stuff before the curfew. Everybody, you know, tries to navigate what streets the gangs don't control, and is it vital that people go out or not, and is the bank going to be burned down today, is the police station going to be attacked or burned down. In an ironic twist, there's a building, an organization called IBESR, which is the organization that oversees orphanages like us, you know, does all the paperwork and the licenses and all the rest of it. That building was overrun, not by gangsters, not by the people who are terrorizing Haiti, but by normal Haitians who were chased out of their homes by the gangs, and they had no place to live. So they ransacked this building trying to find a place to stay, and in the process they destroyed all the files and everything, and they're now all sleeping there. So the building is full of people who are sleeping inside, but all the records are gone. You know, all the furniture and everything's been taken. All the file cabinets are gone. So, and they don't keep a lot of stuff on computers there. So it's all by paper. So we're probably, if Haiti ever gets back on its feet, there'll be like no records of all the licenses for the orphanages, you know? So It's just not a way to live. And it's why I keep imploring people and doing programs like yours to say that we need to do more than just send some money. And we need to do more than calling it a bleep hole country or things like that. It's Haiti is part of America's history, whether we want to admit it or not. We occupied Haiti for 15 years in the early 1900s. We ran that country. We wrote the constitution that they currently operate under. We had all their money in our banks, and they're right off of our shore. This isn't half a world away. And yet we refuse to go in, you know, with any military force or presence to try to take down these gangs. We want other people to do it. Maybe because it's a political year or an election year. I don't know. So they're asking Kenya, you know, half a world away.
That's right.
To send soldiers when we're a superpower right on the doorstep. And I don't believe that it would take that much of a force to quell the gang violence that's there. And not compared to what America is capable of doing. But for some reason, there's no appetite for it. And as you just read, there's not even an appetite to evacuate the Americans who are there.
Yeah, it sounds like the Marine force that is on the ground now is really there for the purpose of protecting the embassy and probably evacuating some of the embassy personnel, which, you know, is one aspect of what probably has to happen. But as you point out, there's so much more. And, you know, I thank you for maybe the only upside of your experience is that it's getting the word out in terms of how difficult and desperate the situation is in Haiti. And the group is called Have Faith Haiti. That's your orphanage. You've had it for decades, and people can go to the website and donate. And, you know, you just have to look at the pictures of these beautiful children to understand the devotion that you have to these families and these children that you take care of. So I thank you very much, Mitch, for talking with us. And I hope you'll continue to keep us up to date on what's going on there.
Thank you for showing interest in the story, Martha. And I hope everybody, you know, prays and puts pressure on for the other Americans who are still there, Canadians and others like us, and mostly for the children and the good people of Haiti who deserve better.
Absolutely. I can promise you our prayers, and hopefully there will be some donations flowing in that direction. And we can also shine a light on it through the work that we're doing here at The Story and on Fox. So thank you very much, Mitch. Take care of yourself.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to The Untold Story with Martha McCallum. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Make sure to rate and review. For more podcasts, go to foxnewspodcast.com. Listen ad-free with the Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.